Hello and welcome, heroes, to the Crit Academy. I am your host, Justin.
I'm your co-host, Ian.
Oh, hey.
It literally is written for you. Did you forget unless you forgot your name?
I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot I have actually something here that I'm really supposed to say, but I'm your guest, Austin.
This podcast was created to provide you, our heroes, with new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
We hope to inspire you with creative content that you can bring with you on your next adventure.
Our show may not be suitable for young children, but neither is our D&D games. Oh, no.
It's true.
Thanks for joining us today here at Crit Academy Studios, where everything's made up and your roles don't matter.
Yep, that's right. Your roles are like a hero without a place to hang their hat and unwind.
So a bar?
Kind of, yeah, actually.
God damn it.
It's kind of like a bar.
I wish I would have thought of that before. I could have come up with something better if that would have popped in my head. God damn it. You guys suck. We got a really great show for you guys today. We like to start off every episode off on a high note by giving away Fat Loot's compliments of our sponsors.
Each episode, we will draw one lucky subscriber's name, and they will win the 5-star rated adventure, Banquet of the Damned, compliments of Goblin Stone. Goblin Stone is a community project for D&D fans based out of the UK. They aim to be a place where you can team up with professionals to turn your ideas into high-quality products and give every fan a chance to get published. Be sure to head over to www.goblinstone.com, or you can check out our fellowship link on our website, www.critacademy.com.
Austin, who's our winner today?
Eye of the Wise. Congratulations, dude.
Congratulations, Eye of the Wise. If you enjoy the adventure, please head on over to goblinstone.com and leave them a review and let them know what you think of the product. We got a really great show for you guys today. On our Let's Talk About Blank segment, we have a question in regards to overpowered wizards, apparently. Our main topic is Fortresses, Temples, and Strongholds by a Wall Rock Homebrew. And, of course, we close our show out with our Unearthed Tips and Tricks, where we bring you new and reusable material for both players and DMs. But before all that, we spend a few minutes talking about what's going on in our realm. Austin, what's going on in your realm?
Not a whole lot, honestly. My realm's been pretty bare.
Who are you?
I am a guy who comes in and I'm your friend.
He is a friend of mine, which means he's nobody of consequence.
Yep.
But you haven't done anything exciting in the last few days?
We played D&D together.
Oh yeah? What was exciting about that?
I almost died to fire elementals.
Again.
Again?
Again. Only once. For me.
But I'll say, you almost died the time before that due to a giant rock.
That giant rock fucked me up.
You did get your shit wrecked a couple times. I would apologize, but I don't.
No, it's okay.
And the giants.
I can't believe that giant grabbed me. I can't believe he did. He prepped a spell instead of ran.
How it goes.
I was like, no.
But you had a good time?
Oh, yeah. I used my grappling hook about 3 different occasions, so that felt good.
See? That's cool.
What's going on in your realm, Justin?
I'm glad you asked. As if I didn't see it coming. I'm really excited. As of this recording, our Gun Mage has been released and has sold almost 500 copies.
Oh, yeah.
Cha-ching.
So I am loving it.
Uh-huh.
It's an amazing adventure. I haven't had anybody leave no reviews yet, and I'm kind of worried. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But, hey, I guess no reviews are better than bad reviews.
That's what I'm kind of thinking, too. Like, I mean, at least it's...
This is getting out there.
Still up into interpretation yet, still, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting for that to come in. So if you've picked up the product, pay what you want. So head on over to DM's Guild, type in Crit Academy or Gun Mage, and it'll pop right up. I've really been enjoying that. I'm already working on and trying to finish the underwater adventure. I started it when I started the Unearthed Tips and Tricks stuff, and both working on both projects was too much for me. I was incapable of doing both, so I focused on the UTT first. We completed that. Now I'm working on completing the underwater adventure. Currently, it's called the Dark Tides of Damador, but apparently Damador is like a guy in the D&D world or something very similar, so I'm going to have to change that. But so other than that, it's going pretty good, and I enjoyed trying to smash you guys with fire elementals. That was glorious. Ian, what's going on in your realm?
bought a gym membership and went there a couple times already, so.
Nice.
My man, look at that. Working out. Where were you when I was going there for like 6 months and nobody would go with me?
When was that?
That was like 2 years ago.
He's training in D&D and IRL. Getting his strength score up.
Yeah.
Actually, it's kind of funny you say it because I am thinking about buying a shirt that says, I am going to the gym so I can at least do some things my D&D character can do.
I actually love that
would be
shirt.
Hilarious. Wonderful. So I think that'll do it for In the Realm. Ian, if they'd like to visit other realms, how can they do so?
They can visit our website, critacademy.com. Once they get there, click on the link to get a free trial from audible.com.
Yes, definitely check it out. I just finished the my Audible book for the very first book, Homeland of Dritzt, and it's fucking amazing. I have learned more about the lore of Drow and the Underdark than I ever knew, and it has made me really hate the fucking Drow and it's... their pieces of shit, and their whole culture is horrible. So, I mean, it's a matriarch.
Matriarchy.
Whatever.
I was gonna say, like, I just remember reading parts in Out of the Abyss on that campaign, and I was just like, what is wrong with these people?
Oh, they're fucking nuts, man.
To be clear, there's nothing wrong with the matriarchy, but the ones in charge are complete douchebags.
I guess that did kind of come off wrong.
Yeah.
That is not my intention. My house is a matriarchy, so maybe I'm holding a bit of a grudge because of that. Maybe I relate a little too much to the Drow society.
Wait. Wait, if it's a matriarchy, does it mean it's the guys that get hit in the bar?
I don't know. Is it? They get hit with a whip. With like a snake-tailed whip or whatever that shit is they use.
Yeah. Some guys are into that, you know.
Not this guy. She tried that whip shit on me. I don't like being in pain. I'm a little girl. Ah, don't hit me! So moving on to... moving
GMI.
So moving on to our Let's Talk About Blank segment, we have a question from Charles S. So the wizard in the party keeps casting level 7 fireball and killing most of the enemies with 12d6 fire damage. The rest of us aren't really getting a chance to fight anything. What should the DM do about these overpowered shenanigans?
First off, the wizard is doing his job.
Yes.
I mean... Ultimately, yeah. I was going to say, 12d6 has a load of damage.
Yeah.
And I point out, too, that he's actually elevating the fire spell, so the way I say it, he's blowing through his spell slots faster, which is potentially, actually, long-term campaigning-wise, wouldn't that be good for the party?
Yeah, maybe. As far as what the DM should do, if you feel like... So, obviously, if the player is asking this question, they're feeling that they aren't getting in on the action.
Right.
So, as a DM, I would create additional scenarios that the wizard could blow everything up instantly and still be other encounters in the game.
Either that or just have somebody have more combat encounters or include higher HP enemies among the enemy group.
So, I was thinking
point.
Yeah.
And buff their HP.
I was thinking more encounters. I wasn't actually thinking about buffing their HP. That's actually a really good idea.
Yeah, if you increase the HP, then he'll just have to keep casting them, which means by the time his turn comes around, he'll still get them. But if you give him an opportunity to blow up some shit so he feels good about himself, the adventure moves on, and you put him into a tight space where his fireball can't hit a whole crowd of people, or you just don't send a whole crowd of people after the players. Send one giant guy. He's going to fireball, but he's going to waste it because that certainly is not the most effective mechanic against a single strong opponent.
Just send a planar after him. It'll be okay.
You're a planetar. You can be one too. Saving the planet is the thing to do. Who was I just talking to? I swear to God, I was just talking to somebody about trying. Oh, it was Jom. He was asking about how to get his players back. I think it was Jom trying to get his players back onto a hook, and it was somebody else. God, I talked to too many people.
Might be Jom.
But the idea was that I gave him. I was like, yes, have him chase some artifact. Oh, it's planes hopping. I was like, have him send some artifact.
I think that was me, wasn't it?
Was that you?
Yeah, I think that was me. Literally just like...
Talk about jumping plane to plane and then using, like, gathering artifacts. Was that you?
Yeah, that was me. Yeah. I was like, wait.
That was like 2 days ago and I already forgot.
We talked to Jom about something else altogether.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, it's hard. I talk probably like 4 or 5 people a day, so it's confusing.
That's fair.
But, we're talking about using the plane hopping to gather, like, maybe powerful rings. And when they summon them, it summons, like, a planetar or something. That'd be awesome. I want to be a planeteer now. Fucking just a mage that can only cast Firebolt. Shit, I totally lost where I was going there.
Or I guess you could, for another solution, you can make what, flame-resistant enemies?
There are a lot of those. So, in fact, correct me if I'm wrong, Ian, fire is the most commonly resisted element.
It's up there.
So if you're DM, next to poison, I think. Which is funny, and I only learned this because when I was trying to balance my ability...
But I feel like there's more fire spells out there, too.
Yeah, that's true. I was trying to balance my chromatic burst cantrip, and so I was trying to count all the monsters that had resistance, so I made a Pareto of, like, the highest resistances, and I'm pretty sure the top two was fire followed by poison, and that's two of the elements that they can pick, so...
Right.
It's still not going to be as unbalanced as some people thought. Anyways, those are really good options. The other thing that I would say is put the wizard in some scenarios where he is incapable of doing that, whether it's because the players have to hold on to a target or are in the vicinity of the attack. Now, some wizards are still going to say, fuck you, and blow the enemies and the allies up. I don't know what you can do about that, but is the DM, if you set situations where he can't use that, whether narrow hallways or very small rooms. I mean, that fireball's got a big blast radius, and if you're all in the blast radius, he's less likely to do it. So, or turn corners, lots of corners.
Yeah.
If you don't give him a long distance to be able to blast, and he's in the vicinity of the blast radius, he's less likely to use that spell as well.
You can make him fight like a super ranged enemy too, right? Because I don't think fireball can reach like 300 feet.
It's like 120, I think, or 90.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you could get like someone with like a longbow or something, and
just keep them out of range.
Yeah,
and or, keep them spread out too.
Yeah,
or just have some skirmishers stealth up and just get into their grill.
Yeah, there you go.
See, yeah,
because he's not gonna drop a fireball at his feet. I've done that. So,
but I've totally done that.
I imagine that hurts.
It did. I cheated though. I had like a breath of fire resistant like potion that I drank first. So,
I was like,
yep. Ed's singing a song from Rihanna about whips and chains exciting him.
Oh.
That's disturbing. Especially if you know that he's like really old. Like,
oh boy.
I bet he likes it when the women grab his beard like an old dwarf, you know? anyway, so those are some of the ideas that we have. Do you guys have anything else?
Nope.
I guess, like skirmishers or just bring an assassin in and
incapacitating the wizard.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of grapplers. Having somebody grapple the wizard and just drag him away.
Oh my god.
So, pin him to the ground so he, you know, I mean.
I wonder how you'd go about that. What would you throw at him to do that?
To grapple?
Yeah.
Any creature with a high strength, because a grapple is just a contested check.
That's true, yeah.
So most wizards aren't going to do very well.
Most wizards are going to be like, guys, help.
So you could choke a bitch and drag him into another room privately. I mean,
or throw him in a demiplane.
There you could use like portal spells.
Yeah.
Traps. Traps are a good one. Could you imagine?
Just throw caltrops at his feet.
Caltrops. I'm thinking like you could also do like a magic spell or something that absorbs the spell, right? Like, can you imagine a trap that is essentially a ring of spell storing that when you attack, it just absorbs it, and then the enemy just throws it right back at you? You guys watch Dragon Ball ever?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you remember the stupid android that absorbed the Kamehameha wave? Was it Android 19?
I think it was
18.
Was it Dr. Gero actually?
Yeah.
Dr. Whatever it was, the
I think he's like 20 or something.
He absorbed the Kamehameha wave and it boosted his strength. So you could totally put a character in the an enemy in the game that can do. I just got a new idea for a monster variant.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
I'm on that. All right, Charles, I hope we answered your question. If we did not, feel free to send a letter to the complaint department at critacademy@gmail.com. We get a lot of emails, so if you'd like us to read it, attach a check to it or a money order or something, so we'll put it right to the front of the line, all right? Otherwise, it'll get lost in the mail. It happens often. So that'll do it for our Let's Talk About Blank segment. Now moving on to the meat and potatoes of the show, our main topic, Fortresses, Temples, and Strongholds by Walrock Homebrew. I'm really excited about this topic, you guys.
I actually am, too.
This is just an amazing product. So, Ian, what exactly is Fortresses, Temples, and Strongholds?
The world is a wild and scary place, full of monsters, malevolence, and myriads of evils to be expunged. Wouldn't it be wonderful to have a place to unwind, a place to hang your hat, build, and customize, and a place to call home?
Wouldn't it be nice to leave your mark in the world, to build a permanent edifice as a testament to the ages, a bulwark of safety against the ravages of time? Would you build a mighty temple to your gods, proclaiming your faith far and wide, a dreary dungeon to complete with a grotto of poisonous herbs and holding cells for those who would oppose you. Or a quiet cottage in the forest, an idyllic and relaxing retreat holding a simple magical study.
So if you haven't figured out, the fortresses, temples, and strongholds is a rule set that holds options to build all of these and more, allowing players to customize the world they live in and create a known presence that the NPCs, such as merchants, hirelings, soldiers, and spellcasters, can flock to and partake in. A stronghold can become the center of a campaign, a place for respite, or a valiant bastion against the dark forces that threaten the world. Now, if your genitals aren't already shaking with excitement...
Or it could just build a pub.
What the fuck?
That'd be lit.
That is so overdone. Of all the things that's in this book, you want to build a pub?
Yep.
I was thinking like building like a mega castle and then have like some demon horde wave come in. You guys have to fight it like every week.
You know, it's funny you say that. Goblinstone has an adventure called... Chapel on the Cliffs that puts you in a similar situation.
Oh,
where,
really?
Where you go to a city and have to kind of take up residence as it's constantly besieged by zombies every night.
It's
fucking dope.
Cool.
It is awesome.
That sounds cool as hell.
I'll put a link in the show notes to that. So this book is pretty amazing. There is so much content in it that, I mean, it's 18 pages of fucking sexy. When you first get into this book, the very first topic that it discusses is building your home, right? And it comes with an entire table that discusses not only the type of structures, how large they are, how much they cost, how long they take to build, what is a special bonus room that you get that's attached to it, and we'll talk a little bit about that, what type of hirelings you would need to run it. And it's got it categorized by two, apparently. I didn't realize that before, skilled and unskilled hirelings.
Yep.
I assume unskilled are fucking...
It's
slaves.
Pretty much just like servants, actually.
Servant.
I think is
I
when I
slaves,
read in it.
Well, actually, there's a table for
pretty much slaves,
slaves
too, yeah.
But
there is one for slaves.
But it did say there's one for evil characters, which I have some disagreements with. But that's another topic unto itself.
Well, you don't think good people can have slaves?
Well, it depends on the society what their values were.
Right. Like in a.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Most people believe for good reason that slavery is a horrible thing.
Right. No, yeah. Don't. We're just saying, like, given like the context of the world that they live in, that seems kind of weird that it's strictly just for evil people.
Yeah, because I guess you wouldn't necessarily be a bad person if you grew up in a world where slaves are normal.
Exactly.
I mean, you can have slaves and not treat them like piles of shit.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That's not generally how it goes. But know what? You guys both convinced me.
That's just kind of how we see that. So.
I was just thinking like slaves and chains and beatings, but that's bad. But not every slave is like that. Then it's just a servant, though, isn't it?
Like a house servant that you don't pay like every day, which they actually do have like a daily pay thing on
okay,
there.
Okay, we'll talk about that.
So it's actually really cool.
I mean, shoot, even in the anime, the something Shield Hero.
Oh, Rising of the Shield Hero, yeah. That's actually a very good segue into that.
I mean, they even point at like the main character saying, "You own a slave!"
And
yeah,
he
it's
does.
Legal here.
And he does absolutely nothing wrong with the slave. He actually treats her like a friend.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's awesome.
It's super cool.
I'll have to check that out. That's actually on my to watch because I think you've mentioned it before.
It's
been really good
recommend.
So far, yeah.
So back to the topic.
Yeah,
we got what are some of the different types of structures you guys that come up in here? I mean, the house is obviously a common one, but there's some really interesting ones here.
We got some castles. We got some strongholds. We got some guild halls. We got options.
Yeah.
We have a lot of options, actually.
It comes with temples. And what's cool is each one, it comes with all these different options. Like, if you were to buy get a little tiny cottage or a medium house, construction, 2,500 gold pieces, and only takes 30 days. But by comparison, a large castle or a palace it costs 500,000 gold pieces and takes 1,200 days.
500,000
right?
gold.
I'm actually disappointed there's no bunker option in here.
Is there not one? There
no.
really isn't?
I would say that the catacombs fits that.
Oh, yeah, there
right?
is a catacombs. That's true.
You mean skeleton farm?
Sure. Sorry, keep all your dead enemies and your dead slaves, apparently.
Hey, that'd be great for a necromancer.
Yeah.
Not all necromancers are evil, man.
But that doesn't mean they can't have, like, a supply of, like, dead
skeletons
people
in there. How many skeletons do you have in your closet? You don't want to know. Aren't you running for office? So?
It's so hard to raise a family. That one they're buried next to each other.
Are you talking about figuratively or literally?
Both. Can it be both?
Well, I guess. Then by that account, I don't think we have a number imaginable at this time period.
So this book, or this section of the table, this building structures, gives you all the information you need for like the basic framework of building one. Now, we were talking about construction time. Austin, you actually had an interesting question earlier.
So I thought it was really weird. The fact that, I mean, I guess it's not really weird because it makes sense, right? So the palace or large castle takes 1,200 days to make. And to me, that makes sense. It's a big castle and you're putting a lot of money to it and you're going to fully furnish it.
I mean, like some, like I know historically some castles took about 10 years to build.
So yeah. Right. So, but the only issue is I was like, does that mean I have to take 1,200 long rests just to get this thing built?
No. So in 5th edition, this actually fits really well. They have the focus is downtime, right? A lot of things can be done in downtime. So
that's true.
As a DM, when you're setting up your adventure, if you're planning on something like this, all your adventures don't have to be sequential day after day. You could go on a quest to find the beast that's slaughtering the farmer's cattle, and that could take a couple days, and then maybe an entire week passes before you move on to the next adventure.
Okay.
So what are they doing in the downtime? That's where backgrounds really come in handy, right? If you're a sage background, okay, so we come back, a 10-day has passed since your last adventure. Austin, what have you been doing?
I've been studying in my library.
There you go. And so now, as the DM or the player, whoever is focused on making sure the structure is built, then just adds, okay, a 10-day or 10 days, a week has passed, or 10 days, that's, I'm that much closer. If you're building a small house, that's a third of the time. So as you're, as a DM, if you're going to incorporate something like this, and I don't know if you agree with it, Ian, but if you're going to plan to incorporate something like this, make sure that you plan out how your adventures have a timeline, right? Make a timeline of your adventures and how they relate to each other, so you can, oh, there's a big gap here. There's no reason these need to be right next to each other, so I can put a month in there, right?
Right.
So that way the players do get to enjoy the fruits of their labor. But then again, you have to earn 500,000 gold first.
500,000 gold pieces is absolutely astronomical. Right, that's ridiculous. I don't even know how you'd come up with that much money.
The building structures also come with bonus rooms, something that's unique to them. And like, for instance, the abbey comes with a garden, the college or school comes with a theater, the dungeon comes with jails. So these are bonus rooms you get just for building that particular structure without the associated cost that goes with it.
Now, I was going to say, except for the large castle, of course, which, oh, and I guess the medium house as well. You can have any room
at discounted prices, right?
Except for the large castle that says any room that costs only one room point.
Oh, okay. So that's interesting. So you actually get to pick on those ones.
Mm-hmm.
Now you might be saying, well, what if I find a building that's already damaged? How would they handle that, Ian?
Ooh, I believe there actually are some rules in there about that.
Yeah, there is. There's a short table, if I'm not mistaken.
And depending on how damaged the building is, it'll cost more to repair. That's what it comes down to.
Scattered ruins. The damage percent is 76 to 100%. It gives you not much more than foundation. It sounds like you can reduce the... Is it reducing the price?
Pretty much.
Or is it just... Is it time as well?
Well, let's take a look at that.
Oh, right, yeah. Cost and time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so depending on the severity, according to this table, the severity of the building also reduces the cost and stuff, which is a very fantastic thing to do.
I actually like that a lot, yeah.
Because how often are you adventuring in ruins and shit, you know? Hey, there ain't no wizard in this tower, and we just killed all the zombies. Put a flag. Mark it for home.
I wonder if you could actually roll, a D100 as well, just to, kind of put some randomness into it. Like, oh, it wasn't actually as bad as we thought. Like, it actually turned out pretty okay.
I could totally see you guys going in with it being at a certain damage rate, and then that fucking level 7 wizard dropping those 7 fireballs fucking destroys and lays waste to it. Well, it was a nice house.
Yeah, it was a nice house. Now it's just a pile of rubble that we have to rebuild from scratch.
By the bright side, you can do it how you want.
Absolutely. Well,
that's true.
So at that point, you should find a good location, you know?
Right.
That's one thing I noticed they didn't touch on too much was location. What are the advantages? Yeah. Like, obviously, if I build my house right on a fork of a road, I'm going to get higher traffic, but is the kingdom going to come and kick my ass or something. So there is a section on different types of structures that give you the different details and the types of things that fit in there. For instance, it gives you a good description of each one. So in this example, we keep talking about the cottage, so I use that as an example. It says that it's a small to medium cozy hovel, shop, or home that can house a maximum of 5 people in close quarters. It's made of thatch, lumber, brick, or similar material. After you build this structure, you may later build one room at half of its cost. That comes back to that bonus room.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's instructions kind of for each one to give you a little. So it's not just the table and here's what you get, or just a table. It's also a little, here's kind of what you can expect to go with that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Is there any one of these that has an interesting description that you guys want to talk about?
I just thought the tower was odd. I didn't actually think they would put something like that in there, I suppose. If you wanted me to read the description on it? Okay. It's a large single spire set somewhere high and remote with an excellent view. Fortified towers are typically used as military lookouts, wizard spires, or immense lighthouses. Includes private rooms for up to 25 occupants, which
that's
is pretty kind of a lot.
It's bigger than I would have thought it would be.
Yeah. Tightly packed bunks for up to 100 visitors, acolytes, or staff, and a stables that cost neither room points nor gold. So
what is your reservation with this?
I just thought it was like weird that it can house just so much.
It's a big tower.
Yeah, it is a very large, like I was thinking like I guess like one of those
rooms,
like watchtowers, yeah. You know what I mean? So it just was interesting to me.
Yeah.
That was an option. And not only that,
I think
it's
you're
an
more
option
thinking
think
of the
of.
Outpost maybe.
Yeah.
Well, no, this says 25 soldiers, so they're very large, apparently.
Oh, outpost or fort. Okay, so that's like an actual like military base. That's what they mean by outpost. Okay. Yeah. Weird.
I like the tower just because if I was like a wizard or something, I want my own tower. Who the hell doesn't want a tower?
Right. Or like if I was just like, if I wanted to be like a commander or something and have my own like troops and stuff,
mm-hmm.
That'd be kind of cool.
Ian, do you have a favorite room?
Well, I'm definitely fond of the guild hall.
Oh, yeah?
There's a guild hall? I didn't even notice.
Just because there's plenty of options, you can go off that, like, or use a springboard for adventures, or you could use it to create connections.
Ooh,
I actually like that a lot.
That would
be
a really good one if you
the guild artisan background, even. That'd be
oh,
cool.
That would fit really good with that. That would be pretty dope.
That'd be really awesome. Have like your own base of operations.
You become the local blacksmith. Well, you know that guild hall that I built out and fleshed out? Hrothgar is going to retire now, and I'm going to roll a new character.
That'd be kind of cool, actually.
And so then every time the heroes come through town, they get to go see Hrothgar. And
yeah.
It's no longer the player. It's somebody else.
That'd be kind of cool, actually.
Honestly, if you're running a homebrew world, one of my favorite things about this is you could keep these structures in place in the homebrew world.
You could.
So if we play as a group of adventures, right, Ian?
Yep.
We let's say we're running Storm King's Thunder, but we're doing it in my world. And you guys build a guild hall artisan, you know, or Hrothgar's wares or something. And then we play different characters in the same world. Maybe 10 years has passed. You go there, that place is still there. It's grown a lot. And that player's structure has become part of the story. And that's dope.
Right.
We got a guild hall. We got a blacksmith. We got a temple. What's that outhouse doing there?
That wasn't there yesterday.
Huh. Is that a ladder that leads down in there? What's going on?
Is that a house made out of granite? Who built a house made out of granite?
It's very well made for an outhouse.
And I already told Austin about this, but this is where I got the rules and stuff for the thing you're building.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, for his out. Yeah, I've had this for a while.
Okay.
Probably like 6 months. I just am now getting to it. Ian. Once you've decided on the room you want or the building you want, what other things do you need to be able to have good, you know, guidance on? And what do you got to do with it at that point?
Well, each structure has a certain amount of rooms available, too. Like, some structures, as we have discussed earlier, comes with certain room types.
Uh-huh.
But you can add on to that.
Oh, okay.
And which I think is that, what is it, room points?
Yep.
So I think each one says what? Room points?
Yeah. Yep.
You can, like, construct your own armory. You can construct your own alchemist lab. You can create your own library.
Hmm.
Yeah, for instance, okay, so yeah, I see this now. So the mm-hmm. cottage has one room point, while the abbey has 6, or the castle has 10. So you mentioned the different add-ons, right? The one that really was interesting to me was the alchemist lab, right? So in each one of these, they give you a really good amount of information. For instance, under the alchemist lab, it says glass-blown tubes, alembics, piping, and jars line the walls in dusty candlelit shelves. The air is musky with the smell of dried herbs. A cauldron bubbles rhythmically atop an open flame. Each room gives you this furnishing, gives you a very descriptive thing, but it tells you how many, the size cost, in this case, one room point, the cost of the structure, which is 2,500 gold pieces, and the construction time. Now, what makes this cooler than anything is the benefits that come with each room.
Not only that, it's super detailed too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Austin, what is the benefit of having an alchemist lab?
All transmutation spells cast within this room by the owners of this structure and their allies have twice their normal duration and half their normal materials cost. So you're just getting like just 50% off and 50% gain.
That's fantastic.
For no reason. In addition
to... Well, $2,500 gold reason.
I mean, yeah, but...
You got a house.
But in addition, the alchemist supplies and poisoner's kit and... herbalism kit are always considered to be present here, and within this room, any checks with these tools are made with advantage by individuals who have proficiency with them.
It also gives you an alternative, may also be a herbalist or witch's hut.
Oh, yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Hmm.
So, Ian, is this something that you think would be a really cool feature to have in your D&D sessions, your games?
Most definitely, especially if like a rogue among the party or a medic.
Absolutely. That's kind of what I thought of. So there is a lot. I mean, there's got to be like 20 different types of rooms here.
Yeah.
Is there any other rooms that really jumped out at you that you thought were interesting?
Actually, I found the clock tower to be pretty interesting.
I was actually going to make note of that one, too.
We'll start with Ian first. Why do you think the clock tower is interesting?
Well, the clock tower assumes you actually have a large enough structure where you have workers there. And because there's a clock tower present, you are basically able to help you set schedules and use the workers' time more efficiently.
I didn't even think about that. That is dope as hell, dude. Like, as soon as the bell tolls, the whips start cracking if somebody's not back on their job.
Which would also actually create some really interesting NPC interactions.
Oh, absolutely.
That would be super interesting.
We were talking about slaves. Could you imagine that every time you hear that bell, you know somebody's getting cracked?
Or you just hear, like, screams in the background, and the other adventurers are like, is everything okay? And you're just like, oh, no, everything's fine.
There is no bell. There's it's just screaming. God. You're late.
Oh, my God.
Every hour the Wilhelm screen occurs.
Oh, man, that's awesome. So it comes with its own little really in-depth detail. It says, rising high above the central point and easily visible to all, the stylized yet simple face of this enormous clock hides a complex assembly of gigantic gears all turning in unison with expertly synchronized motion. So, once again, these have costs and time and size costs, but it has something else the last one didn't. Ian, what is that?
It requires you to have knowledge of clockwork technology, and the structure must have at least 3 room points available.
So, that's interesting.
I actually didn't even notice that before.
So, not every D&D world has something like this, right? Because you're getting on the verge of, like, I don't want to say quite steampunk, but I can see some DMs not wanting to allow something like this. Honestly, I would, because basic working of gears is simple.
Right.
But I can see some particular DMs having a hissy fit about it. The other thing is it has to already attach to a large structure, something that's already got stuff built. So you can't even build this till you've already spent a lot of money on some other structure, mm-hmm. which I think is really interesting.
So I think like you could do like a chapel or like a temple, I think, mm-hmm. is some of the options you could do on that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that. A marketplace, too, would be really good.
That would actually be really cool.
For setting up when setup occurs and when a teardown is and when the merchants start, you know, selling.
I think even the aforementioned outpost and fort can do this, too. I think it just barely has enough.
Okay, yeah, I could see that.
It would be weird. Don't get me wrong, but it could be
well,
there.
For training purposes.
Oh yeah, I guess
right.
So.
You know, you soldiers
like
got to get up,
time.
And yeah. So I can see that having a lot of benefit. Speaking of benefit, the presence of a clock tower greatly increases the efficiency of your workforce and thus your entire structure, requiring you to spend less on maintenance and wages to achieve the same effect. Reduce the total amount the structure's hirelings must be paid by 10 gold pieces daily. So
that adds up.
That
that's really fantastic because while it cost a lot of gold in the upfront, depending on how long the campaign is, this can actually save you money in the long run. Hopefully, if your building is designed to make a profit, increase in the profit, which I think is just dope as hell.
There's actually another cool one.
What's that?
It's the Dox Planar. A literal rippling hole in the fabric of space and time that you can just have in a room, and you can have a merchant come by.
From another dimension.
That's dope as hell.
So you can literally have a celestial come into your home and be like, oh, I have some wares.
That's
except
cool.
They'd be more like, hello, I have some wares.
That sounds more like an evil person.
Yeah,
like,
I guess that's true. But it's not like a demon where it's like...
it's not guttural.
Yeah.
So this is interesting. So aside from...
it does cost a lot, though.
Yeah, it costs 15,000 gold in 30 days and requires knowledge of planar and travel technology. That being said, another really cool thing, if you're the DM, you can use this as a springboard for ideas of things to put in your castles. Because everyone says, oh, yeah, you approach the castle and it's big and it's got some rooms and some soldiers in it and shit and that's it. But if you actually start populating it with shit like this, can you imagine if your players are just sneaking around and they stumble across a room and a giant fucking celestial just appears?
And it's just a giant rippling hole in space and there's just a being of light and you're like, I don't think this belongs here.
That's pretty dope.
Also, there's a table for what kind of merchant comes by. We can actually look at that
later. We're actually going to get into that more detail here shortly because there's a section for that.
Yep.
We'll probably go through one more of these. And the one I wanted to specifically talk about, I mean, they talk about, coming up with or having jails and other different types of escape tunnels and all those things. But the thing that really caught my eye, and this is something that probably, and they even give a warning to, might be something you have to really put a lot of thought into before you allow, but it's the magical enchanter, right? Mm-hmm. You add a room where there is a spellcasting wizard there who provides many different spellcasting benefits. It includes creating things like potions and maybe even crafting magical items for you, for the players. If you like to give your players lots of magical items and you like to give them a wish list, this is something you could really consider adding. It gives you crafting time and cost and stuff like that that's required for it. 10,000 days. Yeah.
For a legendary item.
For a legendary item.
For a legendary item. For a literal one-of-a-kind item. But yeah.
But still... so to me, this is really interesting. Once again, you want to be very careful because it does have a lot of power, but there are so many other options here. You don't necessarily have that. And like I said, they do give warning to it, but I thought that that was really interesting. Cause it gives you an easy way to, way to craft certain things that includes, basic potions and stuff. I mean, once again, there are just dozens and dozens of different rooms you can create.
Yeah.
Even things like sewers and ritual circles and siege workshops and even a theater. I mean, who doesn't want a theater? Like, if you're a bard and you have a house, having a theater would be awesome.
No, that you get like tips and stuff.
Well, yeah, you have people just come up on like a you guys ever? I don't know if you how much anime you guys watch, but there was the Aladdin one. Was it Maggie?
Oh,
Magi, yeah.
Yeah.
There was a prequel to it that starred Sinbad.
Yep.
Oh, right? Was that one?
Oh, okay. God. I loved it better than the first one.
I did,
too. Anyways, and Sinbad is trying to make money. So what does? He just goes and he tells his adventuring tales. And he draws a whole crowd till they finally let him into, this Coliseum theater room. And he's telling his story of his great heroism and stuff. And something like that would be so awesome if you had an entertainer background or you had a bard or you just had a character that liked that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So, and then you could just earn, tips as you're performing. What'd you do in your 10 days? Oh, every night I performed, I performed our tale of how we slew the evil Duergar King Hrothgar or some shit.
I'm still amused how the prequel series followed Sinbad, because in the main series, by that point, he was a very well-established hero king who was so OP that even the other was like, nope.
It was so awesome, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, when you meet him the first time, he's already the super badass, but to watch his story of how he got there... It's fucking awesome. I love it. Anyways, so we can kind of move on from this. There's a lot to cover. So so now that you've kind of built your tavern or your inn or whatever structure you want, there are certain select rooms that will entice merchants to visit or take up residence in your structures. That is awesome, right?
Yeah.
Because this creates a driving force of interaction from your location of work or from your structure. Now, which structure do you think would get the most benefit out of this? I think we talked about earlier, we talked about
the planar?
The guild hall.
Oh, the guild hall? Yeah.
I think the guild hall would be really great for this. So how does this work, Ian? How does a DM determine whether a merchant's interested or whether they're even going to show up or any of that stuff?
Well, first off, it depends on what rooms you've installed in the first place.
That's true.
So be like a temple, blacksmith, what have you.
Uh-huh.
And there are tables here that allow you to roll to see what kind of merchants show up.
Okay, so some of the rooms actually tell you when to roll a die to determine when people come and when there's income coming in. There is a die they can roll to determine what the merchants show up with and what they carry, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, if you roll a 53 through a 57 percentile dice, you get a medium and heavy armor and shields merchant. And in some cases, and you're supposed to roll each of the special rooms gives you a number of frequency you're supposed to roll, like whether it's a 10-day or a monthly or whatever.
Yeah.
And then there's a chance that even legendary ones will show up. And you talked about the planar portal, an astral traveler, right?
Yeah.
That can show up. Or a fae shows up to bargain goods in exchange for favors or something like that. And this, there's such detail to this. I mean, what do you guys think about this?
I guess it's just like... It opens up so much more for, you could even like tie this into like plot even.
Absolutely.
Yep. And you could just make it so like, maybe one of these merchants was like a bad dude and like you got robbed or something. You know what I mean? Like you can even do stuff
dude,
like that.
Yeah. And you could even like, considered that.
Like not everything has to go well.
Yeah.
During
it's a scam
this.
Artist.
Yeah. Like maybe, and then that derails off. Like maybe
promising
he like,
build a big, fantastic wall and then not delivering.
And then, and then, like, maybe even, like, further than that. So maybe you got scammed, right? And then you realize that it's just some big crime lord. And, like,
working
now
out
you
of
have
your structure?
Like, yeah, like, it's some dude. And, like, you have to go and, like, find, like, his organization. And you have to infiltrate and, like, do, like, this giant urban, like, warfare, essentially.
Oh, man, that's, like, some house war shit.
And that's just, that'd be so cool.
I say hire this guy.
And that's when you hire the what CR8 assassin, get him with it.
Keep in mind though, not every merchant that shows up is the same quality. So there's actually a quality table that you can roll on that goes from atrocious to excellent.
I didn't even notice that.
So as they start showing up, if you just roll and pour, yeah, this guy's gonna show up. Yeah, I'm selling some spoons. Would you like to check out my wares? You open them up and it's just silverware. And it's not even silver. It's
like
all wood.
It's like a tissue.
Wait a second. It's made of lead.
That's really dope to me. And very nice, fine detail.
He's got like a book and it's just his personal diary.
And I kind of mentioned this briefly already, but as the DM, you can kind of alter these depending on where the players decide to set the stuff up. Mm-hmm. If they set it up in the middle of the woods, you might be a little more reserved with how often somebody shows up, you know? Like, why is anybody showing up? You're in a swamp. Nobody's coming. You live in a swamp.
Tell it to Venice.
You're at least 15 miles from civilization. What do you want from me?
A beggar shows up. How did you get here?
Where'd this house come from?
Here in this book, they actually they talk a little bit about that. But so as a DM, keep in mind when your players build how often you want to do those roles, if you want to alter them a little bit. Additionally, as players, when you build a structure, pick somewhere where people are going to go. Unless you don't want nobody there, then, hey, yeah, build it on the edge of a cliff way, way away from everybody.
Build your giant castle right on top of that mountain like you wanted.
I'm going to build me a castle.
Oh, man.
So now that you've built your structure, you've got your rooms, there are some rooms that can be built up and improved upon and modified in a variety of different ways. Now, this book gives you lots of cool ideas, but you could really, as the DM, go as far as you want with it in the upgrading.
Yeah, some rooms allow you to actually set the room in an alternate dimension.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's probably the coolest one on there is the extra dimensional one.
You got to keep in mind, I love this description. The air inside the room seems somehow thicker, slightly more viscous. Outside shuttered windows, stars and comets cascade by, shining like 1,000 diamonds against a swirling ethereal sky. Ooh, that gives me like chills.
So
that's so awesome.
Badass.
Hell yeah, it is. Whoever wrote this shit's baller.
Yeah, but it's also some other stuff like secret passages to let you go try rest between rooms. Yeah. Or like just hidden rooms in general. Or you could add traps to the rooms, or you could ward the rooms, or you shoot, there's even some teleportation runes that lets you teleport between the rooms.
Or you could just own your own demi plane.
With a bag of holding. Dude, could you stretch a bag of holding over to a door?
The problem though is the bag of holding doesn't have air in it.
What? Is that a thing?
Yeah. It says living creatures will suffocate if they're in there too long.
What?
Oh. Huh.
Okay, so it becomes an execution chamber in a or a gas chamber.
Oh my... Of an extra-dimensional plane so no one can catch you.
Yeah, you stretch the bag of holding over a door and just open the door right this way, Mr. Evil Bad Guy. Close the orc. All right, who's next?
I'm a warforged, I don't care.
Oh, that would be horrible. Or have like a wizard or something that found a way to breathe. We talked about the extra-dimensional thing. That's definitely the biggest. And actually requires you to have a hireling that can cast 8th-level spells to even do that. So
yeah, it's pretty crazy to do in the first place. Yeah.
Secret passage and stuff, not as much. But they give benefits, too. You know, the secret passage says, this modification is built in 2 rooms simultaneously, though it only requires 1 construction cost to be paid. The secret passage makes a hidden connection between those rooms. Duh. Behind walls, under floors, and generally out of view. Similar to the hidden room, the owner of the structure and the allies they designate know how to enter the secret room from either of its entrances and can move through freely between these 2 rooms. All others must make an intelligence check to even find the rooms. So, once again, very powerful, very useful, and really is great for like the rogue. Can you imagine like he's got like 2 rooms and then there's like a bunch of secret underground rooms?
Mm-hmm. And like maybe he's like getting invaded or something, and he's just like going through crawl spaces and stuff,
snap.
He just takes a guy by the collar, slits his throat, and drags him inside or something.
Just leaves him there.
Oh god! And
drags him to his door with his door of holding.
Door of holding. No.
And of course, what are some of the other ones? Those are pretty simple, but you have even like some other stuff too, like trapped rooms, right?
Mm-hmm. Warded. Yeah, I was gonna say
that's really cool. I mean, I personally. As I get a higher level, I'd be more cautious of all of my enemies scrying me. So putting up a warded bedroom where I can't be scryed would be pretty fantastic. So
also want to note about the extra dimensional is that also doesn't work against scrying as well. I think it's actually stated in there.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, like it also has immunity to scrying, tracking, and similar that being located on a different plane provides.
Very
it's
cool.
It's literally a different plane. So
right. So those are little upgrades you can get as you go forth in your adventuring career and are expanding upon your structure. Now, one of the last things they touch on is all the people, right?
Yeah.
If you've got a castle, shit's not going to run itself, right? So they give you a section called Hireling Soldiers and Casters. And something that size requires, you know, constant work and upkeep to keep it operational, especially if it's something more than just a place for you to sleep, you know, if mm-hmm. it's a business or if it's a guild hall or a tavern or an inn or whatever you want. It requires a little bit of support.
Yeah, a little bit of work.
What kind of support would you need something for that, Ian?
Well, it depends on what kind of you have in the first place. But with like castles, it does mention like all the types of... people that arms you can equip to it, if you will, and which book to find them in stat-wise, be like archers, assassins, berserkers, martial arts adepts.
Ah, so the different types of soldiers you can have in your military.
Yep.
Or in your guards you can have, right?
Yep. Also, I still love the fact you can hire the assassin from the monster manual.
Now, keep in mind, you like that, but that's 65 gold pieces a day you're paying that guy.
I know. He's going to go out and kill somebody, and then I'm going to... Job's done. Like, you're free to go. Like, I'll call you later.
This kind of reminds me of like Vin from the Mistborn series, where she's constantly. Do you read any at all? Do you read?
Not a lot.
You should head on over to critacademy.com. There's a button to get a free audiobook. Got to check out Mistborn series, man. Hmm. It's on us. You're welcome.
I don't know who told you about that series in the first place.
You're the third person to tell me about that. You're the only one that reminded me because it had been so long. But anyways,
close enough.
Yeah, because I was reading. I found out it when the first Brandon Sanderson Stormlight Archive book came out. But anyways, so they give you the cost per day and where you can find them in building your wealth. And additionally, it goes into like spellcasters and stuff too, as well as untrained and unskilled servants versus, you know, very skilled servants. Now, This is interesting to me because at this point, if you have a castle, you have hirelings, are you still adventuring for wealth?
I don't even know. Probably not, right? Like, at least not for wealth's sake. You're probably doing it just for the adventure itself. Yeah.
Maybe. At this point, I would think that as a hero, this to me would indicate that I've hit my prime. I'm ready to retire, and I would use that as an opportunity to do so. Mm-hmm. I've got a castle. I've got
loads of hirelings.
Yeah. I've got wenches. I've got what do we do? What are the guy meant?
I guess butlers.
I forget. No,
butlers?
There was a name for them. Do you remember what they're called?
Waiters?
No, not butlers either. But anyways, so at this point, you've got rules for all these and how much it costs, and somebody's going to have to track that. I'm going to be honest. If you come to me asking me to track all this shit, you're on your own. I'm not going to do it. I got enough shit.
Someone's
got to
write it down. There's no way.
I would expect the player to keep track of most of this stuff. But yeah. It gives you all the details you need. Now.
Oh, wow. Skilled hirelings are actually crazy.
Yeah.
Plus 5 bonus to checks with their proficiency. That's wild.
Combine that with like the poison, the alchemist lab, and they can take care of that stuff for you.
That's just...
You just swoop in, pick up some vials, and head right back out.
God.
So they actually add some... thank you, Ed. Swain. And I'm pretty sure he's the one that's told me that before. A swain is a male version of a wench.
I did not know that.
Yeah. I've been told that 3 times. I'm pretty sure by that same guy. so it actually, this book also comes with a few new spells. One is Call of Stronghold.
Oh, these are really cool, actually.
Guess what that does? You summon a structure from one area to another, and it instantly appears within range. It's a 7th level spell, conjuration. It's very dope and has a huge ass spell component cost, 1,000 gold pieces. But I guess if you've got a fancy ass structure,
right,
you probably aren't.
Probably already paid for it.
Not hurting for some cash.
And that metal's consumed.
Yeah, that's rough. And then, of course, they have Raise Land, which upon completion of the spell, the land beneath you and whatever else may be in the land slowly rises skyward, reaching 100 feet in the air for 10 minutes. The area affected by the spell can have a radius up to 1,200 feet. Basically, you can create a floating castle.
That would be awesome.
Oh, fuck a floating castle. You know what I want? I want a floating bar. A floating tavern.
People have to like
only like angels and demons can come,
and they'd be like,
they got all the money.
They just look over like, aren't you a celestial? Aren't you a demon? Why are we both drinking here?
The bourbon toe's amazing. That's why.
It's like
Merrick bourbon toe nailed it.
Remember, you just gotta let it settle in your mouth first, and then you can swallow.
Remember, I told you.
Yeah, it
bourbon
worked.
Toe comes off.
It worked.
So. Ian, what would you do with these spells in your own structure? What would be the advantage, you think?
Well, like with the structure at least, it's like, huh, we need a fort to defend this land. But my fort's all the way over there.
Not
here's my fort.
I'm reminded of, do you guys ever play the old...
But the other one, like the for like Raised Land and all that, I'm like, if you want some instant landscaping, boom.
Dude, you could go into business for yourself doing that. Just floating around and raising people's houses. Your house... Mr. Farmer Guy, your house constantly being raided by bandits? There you go. It just fucking floats up.
Could you imagine the
Sir,
bandits
how am
coming
I going to get down?
They just come back like, how in the fuck? You're just an old farmer. How did this happen?
This reminds me of the old game shit with the City Vane in it. Floating City of Vane. Lunar, a Silver Star story complete. Had that, and that I would love to have my own floating like school, cool. You know, where only like real heroes can train, and they're like uplifted, and mm-hmm. You know, that just I don't know, that just sounds awesome.
Yep.
Also, I just want to make note about the Call Stronghold. If you use that, I think it says 7 times. Oh, maybe it wasn't this one, because there was a something that would make it like permanently stay there.
Tate says magical beards make the world turn. Thank you so much. Figure out what you're going to say yet?
No, I guess I thought it was on there. That's weird. I was talking about Call Stronghold because I thought I read in there somewhere that if you call it enough times in the same spot, it'll actually just stay there permanently.
Oh, it doesn't just stay there when you call it? I didn't
Yeah, because it's only... No, is it?
I thought it stayed there when you called it.
Yeah, it doesn't say it.
I must have... I don't know. Maybe I just missed it.
You'll be holding up my show for a minute.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. If I just
edit it in post.
A minute or two is nothing compared to the shit we've went on. So, of course, before we close out, they actually have one final section on making money. Ian, what are some of the ways they kind of describe it, how your structures can make money?
Well, obviously, aside from like the merchants you can have there selling stuff and paying rent, if it's like a college or a temple, you can have tithes or tuitions paid.
Hmm.
And there's also, if you're like located in like a main trade area, you can charge for a rite of passage for tolls.
Oh, dude, I would be such a dick. I would like find the biggest area, like the biggest river, and build a bridge over it, and then raise the bridge with the raised land spell.
Oh my!
And so,
God.
Oh, you want to cross my bridge? Okay, you got to pay the tithe, and then the bridge lowers into place so they can cross in.
Oh, and also mentions too, if you're like a military structure, you could also have the locals pay protection.
Yep, I actually like that one a lot too.
You could even use that for like bad guys. Like bad guys set up at a fort nearby, a structure, and they're just like your private militia, and they'll just kill whoever everybody shows up.
Private militia. I didn't even think about that. Just having like some guys, just all your underlings, and you're like, I really didn't like this town. Let's kill them.
take them all. All right. Well, I love this product. I think it's really well done. I think that Walrock Homebrew did a phenomenal job with the design. By the way, the art in this book is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's all really cool painted pictures. I can't recommend it enough. Do you guys have any final comments on this?
No, I think we touched on the general guidelines for this book.
Yeah. The extra dimensional room just is so crazy. I can't believe they wrote something like that in there.
I love that there's baths in there.
Oh, yeah, there was a baths one. And it helps you with persuasion checks, I think.
Of course it does.
Because you smell good.
I smell good anyway. Usually. So I think that'll do it for our main topic today, fortresses, temples, and strongholds. You can find this product on DM's Guild. There's actually a link in our show notes, or we'll have a post that links during the when the episode goes live. Definitely check it out.
Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing product, and it's only a few bucks. I think it might be $5, and it's worth every penny. So
yeah,
check it out. Before we move on to our Unearthed Tips and Tricks, we have another gift to give away, Compliments of Loresmith.
Each episode, we will draw another lucky subscriber's name, and they will win the best-selling adventure, The Claws of Madness, Compliments of Loresmith. Loresmith is a small indie team of creative artists who remember exploring the realms together with friends, finding incredible places, and meeting colorful characters along the way. They set out to deliver an experience that sparks those lasting impressions that pushed them to create their first standalone adventure, The Claws of Madness. This best-selling adventure is one that you don't want to miss.
Ian, who's our winner today?
Our winner today is Viper80.
Congratulations, Viper80, you are this week's winner. If you enjoy The Claws of Madness, please leave Loresmith a review and let him know what you liked.
And now, what you've all been waiting for, our Unearthed Tips and Tricks segment, where we bring you new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
Our character concept of the episode comes from Ryan Sheen, the bearded bard. Now, he says that this can be any race, but bard works best. I also think if you got the entertainer background, it would work really well too. Or if you're just a dwarf. This character concept is obsessed with beards and everything beard related. His woman even must have a beard, okay?
It really does, I think, state that later on.
He says apparently, for inspiration, look to the Australian band called The Beards. How is that even a thing? He says they have over 100 songs that are all about beards. So he gives some samples here. I'm in the mood for beards.
The beard stays.
Got me a beard.
This beard stays. He says, what? Shave my beard? Bitch, get out of here.
You need to leave.
The beard stays and you go. I think he gives a lot of examples, but I think you could have a lot of fun coming up with your own stuff, like mixing it with like real songs, except supplementing a word like, when a man loves a beard.
Let it
sorry,
grow.
Ladies.
Let it grow.
Oh, no.
Can't
one.
Shave it off anymore. Let it grow.
Let it grow. Oh, my God. You guys are hilarious. Stop.
Increasing my man score.
Stop. In the name of beards, before I break your skull.
Has like a war hammer.
One of these is apparently Tater's theme songs.
They are all Tater theme song.
Oh, man.
I think beards are great.
I think we also said that the bard should also have like something beard related on like
his
lute or something.
Like, his lute is like beard hair as the strings. Or maybe it's got like a beard hanging from the bottom.
Like every
of
time
it.
He's jamming out, it's like doing one of these.
It's like flopping around.
His mouth's a giant goat.
Oh my God. What?
His mouth's a giant goat.
His mouth's a giant goat?
Mount.
Oh, his mount's a giant goat. Oh, because they have a beard.
Yeah.
Oh, that's slick. God. I like that. That's good. So this character concept is obviously over the top and ridiculous, but if you're going to run with something like this, you gotta play it full. You got to go home with it. Every time somebody's got a beard, be like, hey, DM, does this guy got a beard? Yes. Sir, I just want to say, I love your beard.
In fact, I'm going to play a song right now about your beard.
About your beard?
And the player's got to think of something on the spot.
Oh, that's about hilarious. About a beard. Your beard's not greasy anymore. Maybe he's a merchant. He's a merchant with the entertainer background, and he's trying to sell like beard cleaner or something.
Beard oils.
Beard oils.
Oh,
essential
no.
oils for the beard. Make him shine pristine and smooth like a baby's bottom.
Beard growing tonics.
You could also... Now, there's a few types of beards we have for your product. We have the ones that make it so your beard's all gruff and almost like just gnarly, or you can be like one of those Chinese warlords who have their very long, smooth beard.
I also sell beads if you like to braid your beard.
Yes. We also have beard trimming available if you like.
Yes, that's a good one.
You see, you sell in a little special toolkit that comes with like scissors and a
proficiency
comb and
with a beard kit.
Oh my God, we need to do that.
Oh no.
Tater wants to know when I'm going to join grow my own beard. I have a beard, but I can't grow a big long one, mostly because it gets everything in it. So this is about as long as I'm willing to go. Ed says I use badass beard care. Oh my God. This is Ryan, this is a really awesome submission. Thank you so much. Do you guys have any other
great
comments on that?
It's just so well made.
Dude, totally have a really, really long beard and tie a dagger to it, and that becomes one of your weapons.
Oh, just like a like sweet. A roped... It's basically like got whip stats or something, but it's just...
your beard. Maybe you can find a wizard and enchant your beard to make it a sentient magic item.
Oh my God, please.
Oh my gosh, that's
hilarious. Have you guys seen Naruto?
I have.
So yep. He's got like Jiraiya where he like needle Jizos himself with the beard.
Yes.
So it all turns into spikes around him.
You mean his hair?
Yeah.
He doesn't have a beard. Does he?
No.
Well, no, he doesn't, but you can make
you
the
can
character
with
the
beard.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, you can even use the give your the
like
character the
sword.
Racial. There's a racial feat for the tiefling, I think, that does, like, barbed, like, when somebody grabs you, it deals barbed damage. I would totally
really?
Give that to, yeah.
I did not know that.
It's in Xanathar's that has the racial feats.
Is it like a sub? Oh, no, you're right. It is in Xanathar's. You're right. Yep.
It's like a
I
think it's the tiefling one. But you could totally give your character
that'd
they got
so
the beard
badass.
When somebody tries to grapple him, the beard just pierces him like a porcupine.
And it's just like, they're just like, what? Why?
All right.
Why is your facial hair a weapon?
We spent a lot of time on that.
Why is it not?
That is our character concept of the podcast, The Bearded Bard. Austin, would you like to tell us about our monster variant today?
All right. So we have something here called the Wicked Witch. It is an origin of a mage, and it has a new features of Curse of the Wicked Witch recharges after a short or long rest. With a stare, the Wicked Witch can use a bonus action to curse a creature it can see within 60 feet. The creature must make a DC 14 charisma saving throw. On a failed save, the creature is also cursed with magical deformities. While deformed, the creature has its speed halved, yikes, and has a disadvantage on ability checks, saving throws, and attacks based on strength or dexterity. Wow.
Taylor says he married the real wicked rich.
Oh, no. Good thing he's texting, because if he said that out loud, she would hear.
The transformed creature can repeat the saving throw whenever it finishes a long rest, ending the effect on success. So you can't even, like, repeat, like...
You're stuck with it for a while if you fail.
Yeah, that sucks.
At least a couple days. Imagine how everyone's going to react to you.
Oh, that would suck on social rules. Like, you'd be attacked on sight and stuff, too, probably.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Because they're like, it's a zombie. I'm like, it's not a zombie. I'm really...
Well, depending on where the horror is, this is, if it messes up your tongue, you're walking like this. I'm not evil. Don't attack me.
I'm not a zombie. I'm a leper.
What's the last feature there they get?
Oh, horrifying visage. Each non-undead creature within 60 feet of the Wicked Witch that can see her must succeed on a DC 14 wisdom saving throw or be frightened for 1 minute. A frightened target can repeat the saving throw at the end of each of its turns, with disadvantage if the Wicked Witch is within line of sight, ending the effect on itself on a success. If a target saving throw is successful or the effect ends for it, the target is immune to the Wicked Witch's horrifying visage for the next 24 hours.
All right, so what do you guys think about this?
Nice.
It would suck to run into it. Yep. I would hope it's not hostile, which it probably is.
Well, honestly, even if it isn't hostile, you're automatically going to be potentially fleeing for your life because she's so horrible. So that was the idea behind the horrible, horrifying visage. The curse, I really like hags. But I wanted something a little bit weaker than the hags, but with a little more
hags are pretty intense.
Versatility. Mm-hmm. And so using the mage really really kind of fit that theme. I love the curse. Basically, it creates a physical deformity that affects the character beyond the combat encounter.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be days depending on how their save goes, or weeks, you know, where you got to walk around looking like a freaking ogre. and that was kind of the thought behind this is there's not very many features that last beyond a combat or a round or something other than like diseases and poisons. And this was one of the features I found in the book that really had something that lasted longer and beyond, because what if you ran into this person before you were supposed to meet with a king?
Yeah, that would be rough. I would. You'd have to roll real well on those persuasions.
Well, you have disadvantage on them all, too.
Yeah.
So it really can mess up those types of encounters. What do you think, Ian?
Yeah, I definitely think it can definitely throw off a player's plans.
You could, for sure. You'd have to like have like a disguise kit or something, I guess. I don't even know what you'd do. If you have it, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know how I'd rectify the situation I have on me.
You'd be walking around looking like shit for a while. Like a big, literally a pile of shit with boils all over your face and all brown and shit.
You have like cysts all on you and stuff.
God, so gross. You can't talk right because they're all forming in your mouths and can't see out of one eye because it looks like somebody punched you in the face.
God.
It's all bubbling. You're walking all janky because it messed up your feet and shit. Like all walking with toes toe to toe. Poking inwards.
You have like 7 toes each.
Oh no, that's horrible.
Or you have 7 toes on one and 3 toes on the other now.
And of course, you can't forget they're probably trying to turn green too.
Yep.
So I think that'll do it for our monster variant, the Wicked Witch.
Pretty cool,
definitely
actually.
Definitely check it out. I really enjoy this monster.
Yeah, it's not like super overpowered or anything. It's just kind of like there to kind of just give this long term disadvantage.
Yeah,
which is fine.
It's painful, but. She can only use it once per combat, so if you succeed, then it's
right.
gone. So.
Yeah.
Same thing with the horrifying visage. So these are like one-hit wonders for the mm-hmm. encounter. So, anyways, I just think that would be hilarious, especially if the person's a vain character, like where their beauty is everything.
Yeah, where,
they just go irate. Yeah. So
they have to like just put a bag over their head. I don't even know what you'd do. Just get a cloak and a mask.
Put a bag over my head. Oh, Billy, you gotta keep that. Basket over your head for a while. I can't see through the wickedness. Oh,
well, just hold my. Oh God, don't hold my hand. Never mind.
Ew, a pus popped in my hand.
Why is it like green mixed with purple? What happened
Gross.
To you?
That's nasty. Oh man. So that'll do it for.
You like Tetsuo at the end of Akira.
Oh my God! It's like that was nasty. It's like just a blob of gook,
a blob of flesh. Really, it wouldn't stop growing.
That'll do it for our monster variant, the Wicked Witch. Our encounter of the podcast is the Ancient Mimic. Our heroes take refuge inside an abandoned home. Little do they know, it's alive and hungry. Essentially, the characters are inside a giant mimic. Now, I tried really, really hard to decide how I wanted this to go, and I thought that it would work best as not a single monster encounter, but a collection of monster encounters. So I kind of envisioned the inside of the house, the different furniture and stuff being individual mimics or mimic stats for mechanics, but are actually like the giant mimics organs. So yeah. As you are stuck in this thing, the door seals up. It's your floor is all sticky. You can't barely move. Everything you touch, you stick to. And you can use the stats of the individual mimics for different core item or core organs to assault the player. So instead of them attacking one giant beast, they have to attack like particular
inside a beast, essentially too. Yeah,
and you can just use the regular stat blocks for that. And have them even shapeshift and change right in front of their eyes if you want. Or maybe they go in and the floor starts to get sticky and you turn it to an acid as it's like digesting them or something. So now you could do like a...
Now you're in a time limit.
Yeah, you can do like a layer action that every round or so or every failed check or whatever time you determine, they start to melt away while they're in and they can't escape. So now they have to figure out what the hell's going on, how they got to get out or how they're going to get out and... what all is and what's actually going on, and watching a chair turn into a mimic would probably give it away that you're inside a mimic.
Yeah.
Or maybe you open up a closet and there's a giant pair of eyes or something, or maybe there's an oven and the oven opens up and is like the maw of the house's, the mimic as it's
you could devouring you.
Yeah. I love this sort of thing. You know, you could always use the Kraken would be a good monster to model some of the features. I know that it has a giant like swallow feature and stuff that you could can treat as everyone swallowed all the time until they get out.
Right.
So there's kind of a lot you can do that. What do you guys think about this?
Well, most players wouldn't see it, Kevin.
I would definitely never see this coming. I would be, if I were my rogue going into this, I would be like, how can I use my grappling hook to at least keep me suspended so I'm not touching the acid on the floor? Hopefully. And that's a hopefully.
Well, who says it's just on the floor? If you're in the inside of this thing, it's like, probably everywhere. But that you can use your grappling hook. Throw it on the ceiling and just hang from it like
Spider-Man.
That's
what I'm saying. It's like... and it melts. I'm like, oh, that's not good.
Melts and you fall on the floor.
And then I'm in a pool of it.
So what would you guys do? How would you better engage this encounter with your players if you were to run this as a DM? What kind of tricks would you recommend trying?
Well, like you said, dealing with stomach acid in some rooms.
Yeah, I really like that idea too. Like you still have to make it seem like that this isn't a house of mimics. You're inside the mimic, right?
Right.
So I do like the stomach acid idea a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking maybe you can like find something that's like, yeah, like the smaller mimics, or you can make that like almost like bacteria in a sense. So like they're the things that are kind of like eating down everything. And you can have like, if the encounter is definitely seemingly too hard for the players, like they're just clearly not getting it or something, and you don't want to outright kill them because obviously this is kind of, out of the blue, walking into a house and suddenly trying to eat you. So you can have like the giant mimic to have like this protruding like almost organ inside it. And you can like attack that. And if you kill that, while trying to fend off everything else inside it, it'll kind of stop the house trying to eat you.
Yeah, I can kind of see that. The other thing you could do is, it could not be so obvious right away. You could have a big, giant, like, king-size bed, like those big four-post ones with, like,
the
stuff hanging over it. And when somebody goes to bed, then the bed tries to eat them. Then everything triggers.
That would scare the crap out of me. I would never trust a bed ever again.
Yeah. Or once we're inside, all the doors out in the windows suddenly disappear.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
I like that, too.
The other thing to consider is...
Or like it just suddenly goes dark.
You could have like the rooms changing, like a hallway starts to enclose on the players like a trap, right?
Oh.
Stuff like that. So
like it's trying to like get them like digest them through the esophagus. Yeah,
maybe it's the throat. That's gross.
Yeah. It's all slimy and stuff too.
It's getting on your armor and your gear and shit.
It's starting to corrode too. It's like, oh God, why?
I figured with the topic of structures, the encounter had to involve a structure somewhere.
Oh, absolutely.
So.
Also, I want to kind of add with that, you could also like impose some like weird disadvantages on that stuff too, since like the room's being filled with like saliva, I guess we can call it. So like maybe it like now like it's difficult terrain, like maybe they can't run it out
because
like it's very like slippery or slick.
Yeah. or sticky, either or.
Yeah,
either,
or any one.
Because traditionally, I think mimics are like super sticky. So,
oh yeah, you're
the
right,
sticky.
Yeah.
Sticky would go good. You can even have rooms that are different too, like the hallway. If it's more like an esophagus, maybe it is slick.
Yeah,
and then at the end is a completely out of place. Go back to maybe the oven. There's an oven at the end of the hallway as the house begins to tilt.
Oh,
and the throat is shrinking, and it's shrinking behind you and creating like a funnel that's pushing you towards this. And all you see is a burning, raging little fire or something inside the oven as it's got teeth and it's clomping down, waiting for you to feed to it like some sort of compacting machine.
Or also fueled by a fire elemental.
Ooh, nice.
Or a furnace.
Or a furnace, yes. Yeah. There you go. Either way, I think it would be awesome, and shit would just be out of place and... Oh man, it sounds
It would just
awesome.
Be so terrifyingly random, and you'd you'd scare your players so much with it too.
Yeah.
So.
All right, I think that'll do it for the encounter of the podcast, the Ancient Mimic. Ian, would you like to tell us about our magic item?
The magic item for today is the Staff of Fate, uncommon staff, and it can be attuned to a cleric, druid, or monk. A black raven's head with diamond eyes tops this mighty staff. It bolsters your fate, increasing your odds of survival, and allowing you to act when others aren't quick enough. This staff has 1d4 plus 1 charges. When one of your melee weapon attacks reduces a target to 0 hit points, you can use a bonus action to instantly spend a hit die to recover hit points. The staff regains 1d4 charges daily at dawn. If you expend the last charge, roll a d20, and then on 1 becomes a non-magical core staff.
What do you guys think?
I like it.
I like it, and... If I knew this entire effect, I would never expend all the charges.
So, it's funny you say that.
I would try to anyway, but of course, I probably wouldn't know that effect, right?
So, by normal magic items, you would. And actually, we'll get into that in our DM tip.
Okay.
Because it actually talks a little bit about exactly what you just asked. But as far as the mechanics as a whole, what do you think about a magic item using your hit dice as a resource to heal you?
I think that's so... Because, like, hit dice are kind of just, like, forgettable, honestly.
Until you're almost dead.
Yeah, until you're almost dead. Rest. Right. So, like, being able to, like, I guess, use it essentially just instantly.
Right.
Right? It's like kind of having, like, a health potion just right on top of you.
Absolutely.
And that's super awesome. Yeah. And especially for monks.
And, you know, honestly, this is kind of, like, in 4th edition, you actually had healing surges that, like, spells triggered it and effect triggered the use of healing surges, which are kind of what hit die are, except they can only be generally used during short rests. So this is something where it gives you a reward now, but punishes you later. Because if you use all your hit dice in combat and continue to take damage, when you're out of that combat and you don't have any more hit dice, you're not going to be able to recover. So it's kind of a double-edged...
It's still fairly balanced. You're just...
It's heal now like or heal later.
Yeah, it's just...
So
it's how much fuel do you want to burn immediately.
Right, and you will run out, right?
Yeah.
healing surges. Hit dice, you only require... you only recover half of them during a long rest.
Yeah.
So you don't recover all of them. So once again, you could run yourself out of hit dice regularly, making... farther along the line encounters more dangerous for you, because there's no coming back from that, you know. I really like this magic item. I don't think there's enough items that do stuff like this, so this was a really good opportunity to add that to it. And honestly, I ripped this concept right from a magical item from 4th edition, so it used to be healing surges and I changed it to anyways, I like this item. I would love to have it as a monk, because my wizards and monks don't last very long.
No.
Except for Daffy. He lasted indefinitely because I just ran away.
Sometimes where are you that's going? What you got to do.
That'll do it for our magic item, the Staff of Fate. Now, our Dungeon Master tip of the podcast comes from Ryan Sheen as well. This is the Ryan Sheen episode. Our DM tip, magic item cards. Make magic item cards before a game and keep them on you. Matt Mercer has blank cards on Geek and Sundry that can be used in Excel to make your own homebrew or copy the DMG descriptions into. As a bonus, make 2 copies of the item. The item can be cursed, and on the second card contains the full details of the cursed item. I recently did this with your magic item, the Forlorn Hope. Thank you, Ryan, for using our magic item and including that. That's dope as hell. The look on the cleric's face after she read the full item card was amazing. knowing that she could have just died. So if you don't know, the item of the Forlorn Hope basically grants like a wish or something like that, but it can take the user's life if it's a selfish wish or some shit. I don't remember the exact details because it was a while ago.
That's hardcore.
But it basically grants you wish at a cost. Now if it's a selfless wish, it does it for free, right?
That's OP.
But most people don't.
Most people wouldn't know that. You'd be trying to
do it for themselves, right? I want to be rich. I want to be gold.
Good on the player for making a selfless wish.
What's interesting is you just talked about the previous item, the staff of fate. If you expend the last charge, you roll a one. That would be great for something like that. Splitting it up so the player doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
So then, your fancy staff, you feel the energy dissipate and it's gone. Would be fantastic.
Right.
This is pretty interesting. He also points out that it also helps stops the players from referencing the book every 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic.
It's a big one.
That's huge. We've mentioned a similar tip for players about their spell cards and features, having those readily available. This is an awesome tip, Ryan. Thank you very much. What do you guys think about this? Do you have any additional comments?
I just think it's an all-around good idea to have.
Yeah, no, cards always save time.
Yep.
Yeah.
We have a link to Matt Mercer's card template in our show notes, so you can pick it up there. Just go and Google it. That'll do it for our Dungeon Master Tip of the Podcast, Magic Item Cards. Thank you, Ryan Sheen. So our player tip of the podcast is...
Don't be a dick!
And you can avoid dickitude by... listening to Ryan Sheen. Not every action you do as a player needs to be followed by, well, that's what my character would do.
That seems redundant to me. Because obviously that is what your character would do because your character is doing it.
If you find yourself saying this phrase a lot, then it's something you feel you need to justify. There's a lot of truth in that.
Mm-hmm.
Not only does it get repetitive, but it also feels like you are just making excuses for shitty behavior. A lot of truth in that. It makes a far better role play to just do the action and live with the consequences. Then try to convince everyone that's what my PC would do. This breaks the roleplay and immersion. I have a pally who stopped our monk from walking into danger just because he was afraid of everything being trapped. Not only did he follow up with, well, that's what Perrin would do, he would also stop curious monk from learning from her mistakes. In this instance, I assume getting an arrow to the face, a giant saw coming out of the side of the walls, you know, all those sorts of stuff. Yeah. What do you guys think about this? Is this something you guys have a lot of experience with?
Not too much, personally.
Yeah, I was going to say, not personally, but I do get it. Like, saying, well, that's what my character would do. Of course I'd stab the priest. Like, yes, I get it.
In my experience, most people who do this are doing evil actions.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time. That's not all the case, but generally that's what it is. Or it's a thief stealing from somebody. Oh, my character would steal from you. No, even a thief would not steal from the companions they're traveling with.
Yeah.
They might have sticky fingers and take from other people. Now, there's not to say that I don't think that that's a problem. I've stolen from players as well. It's kind of... But I've never used the excuse. I was like, oh, well, if I get caught, oh, I'm going to pay a fine. You know what? I think you drop this and hand it back to him, you know? Not, that's what my character would do. So.
Right.
You character stole from my character? My paladin shoves his broadsword into your chest and then smites you. What? Why'd you do that? It's what my character would do.
Right.
So. I just had a conversation with Jom about a character in his game who does a bunch of evil stuff, even to the point where they're about to join, trying to join this like evil group or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the other players are starting to get annoyed because that's what his character would do, right?
Yeah.
And that's just a real simple example of me of another person just trying to justify away the shitty behavior that they have. Because what this player does is clearly disruptive to the game. So, and I feel like he's doing everything he can. But when you run into this sort of behavior, if you're going to fucking do it, own up to it. I'm going to steal from him. Why? Because I'm a thief and I steal everything. Oh, you didn't catch me doing it? Well, tough shit. Can't react. Now, if you're going to be a player, though, handle that not like that. That's the worst way to handle it. Instead, say, Well, my character has sticky fingers, and occasionally stuff disappears. Your character doesn't know that right now, but I would fully understand if he turned around and hits me with his mace in his face, my face, when he finds out. And I'm ready for that, you know?
Yeah.
It's... There's no reason that that should be your go-to response, ever. All right? If you think you're ever using this too much, maybe you need to stop and think about the type of characters you're building. Because when we play a collaborative game of D&D, we should be building characters that can work well with others. Because that's the whole premise of the game. Sure, you can have a loner, but usually it's up to you to find a reason why that person is going to interact with other people. Mm-hmm. And why. Even evil characters. I've played evil characters. You know what? I don't try to kill everything I run into. I do try to manipulate my party members into doing the work for me, because that's far more interesting. But if you feel the urge to say, well, that's what my character would do, then you're not trying hard enough, in my opinion.
It does seem lazy.
Yeah.
Although I will admit, I think I did use that statement when I did stab the priest. So, because they all looked at me, I was like, now hold on, you guys don't know who I am. So,
and
this is...
So, yes, you did. And that was a backstory thing.
Yeah.
So, but you probably could have come up with a better reason why.
I could have came up with a much better reason.
Say, or you could just say, you know what?
At the time,
you
I was like...
You guys don't know this happened, so it's none of your business.
I was just like, you all seem a little shocked. Don't really know how to respond.
Yeah,
with
they
it.
Don't.
So
they don't.
Like,
they didn't understand the reasoning for it.
Yeah, and I didn't want to like give it away, so that's why I went with.
You
could have
just said, you know what, you don't understand.
I could have.
That would. I think that would have been
that.
A
that
probably
would have been the best response.
Anyways, do you have anything to add to this, Ian?
Or somebody saying me and him had a history.
What?
Or saying me and him had history. Let's just leave it at that.
Me and him had history.
Yeah,
that's funny. That's a better response too. And once again, the players probably will think nothing of it.
Right.
Now, if you're backstabbing your allies,
that's a bit different.
Well, he lost a bet, or he didn't pay me, or he owed me something, or he stole from me. Come up with something else besides.
Yeah, come up with something just like cool.
Anything, yes. Besides, that's what my character would do. Put some work into it. As much work as the DM does, come on, you could do better, people. All right, I think that'll do it for our player tip of the podcast.
Don't be a dick.
And you can avoid dickitude by avoiding, well, that's what my character would do. Okay? Don't be that guy. Everyone's that guy. All right. Well, that'll do it for our show today. Before we close out, we have one more gift to give away. Compliments of our buddy, Jeff Stevens.
A small village, empty of villages except for one boy, found sitting and weeping next to a jester's pageant wagon. The boy explains that the villagers, including his family, followed a jester into the wagon and never came out. What madness could the adventurers face? Can they save the villagers, or will they go mad trying? Can you survive the madhouse of Tasha's Kiss?
Austin, who's our winner today?
Our winner today is Outlaw 4467.
Congratulations to Outlaw 4467. If you enjoy the adventure, please leave Jeff Stevens a review. Tell him what you like about the product and how you enjoy his amazing... This adventure, The Madhouse of Tasha's Kiss, is one of my favorite adventures. You have to check it out. I mean, the short-term madness table becomes your friend. And all your party members' friends, too.
Short-term madness is just awesome.
Yeah, I had it.
Such a wonderful mechanic.
I think I was just telling you the other, just on Friday, how I had an adventure where I was changing, like, the flaws and ideals on the characters. Mm-hmm. That was the adventure.
Yeah.
And it was so awesome. The character's like, oh, this is so awesome. If you're interested in seeing that stuff, you can actually head on over to our twitch.tv/CritAcademy and watch the once-a-month adventures that we do run for our patrons. We run a lot of these top-selling adventures from the DMs Guild, so you can kind of get a little bit of... insight into how they run. So
yeah,
well, that'll do it for our show today. Please join us on our next episode, where we hear feedback from you, our heroes. We will be discussing The Guide to Ravnica. I am super excited for this. If you play Magic the Gathering, Ravnica is one of the planes of existence. And it is full of lore and awesome. And I cannot wait to just... I've been wanting to get through this since I got the damn book. So I'm really excited for that. You guys play Magic the Gathering at all?
Nope.
I did a long time ago.
Okay, well, you both just lost 10 cool points.
That's okay.
No, it's not. You're like at 2, man. You ain't got very much left, bro. If you have any feedback on our tips and tricks or topics you'd like us to discuss, please send them to us. You can email them to us at critacademy@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook at Crit Academy.
We hope you've enjoyed your experience here at Crit Academy. If you did, you can help others find the show by leaving a hopefully 5-star review on iTunes or your platform of choice. Or just send us a message telling us how much you enjoy the show.
Yes, currently we have a special contest going on. If you head on over to iTunes and leave us a review, you will be entered to win a free copy of our Honest Tips and Tricks book. We will be giving away a free copy from among those people that leave us a review. So definitely head on over and do that. We'll be picking that winner at the end of March.
Dang right. And also, be sure to give us a like and a share on the various platforms, be it Facebook, Twitter, and so forth.
Yes. If you'd like to support the show, we have a Patreon account. You can head on over to patreon.com/CritAcademy or head on to our website at CritAcademy.com and click the little Patreon button there. You can support us for as little as $1 a month. Every little bit of money that you are willing to toss our way helps improve the show. So we definitely encourage that. You can also join our show weekly, like Tater does.
Yeah. And also, our co-host, who's not here today, due to the fact today's his wife's birthday, he wants to spend time with her, Brandon, he does art commissions.
Yeah, definitely. Check him out. You can head over to Facebook.com and check out his commission prices and some of his art. He did one of the art pieces for our gun mage, and it turned out fantastic. So...
Yep.
Make sure to subscribe to our show at CritAcademy.com so we can help you on your future adventures, as well as a chance to win cool prizes each and every week. You'll also find links to our fellowship members there as well.
Yes, if you haven't checked out Inner Party Conflict, Jeff and Gabe, they do an amazing show. Every episode, they answer your questions to help bring you the best tabletop experience possible. Also, check out D&D Character Labs. Those two guys, every single week, create these very in-depth characters and argue their validity against each other in like real-life bards just to see whose baby's better. And then also check out our newest members, our Brute Force and Ignorance podcast. Check those guys out. Jake and Dan and the crew over there do an awesome show. I think they're 24 episodes in now, and it is awesome. And if you listen, you might hear some special stuff from us popping up on there occasionally. So
hey.
Definitely head over there and check them out. That'll do it for our show today. I am your host, Justin.
I'm your co-host, Ian.
And I'm your guest, Austin. Thanks for listening.
You're welcome.
I just didn't see it was italicized.
Keep your blades sharp and spells prepared, heroes.